Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the season 24 series of the Bombercast. I am Bonser 34, and as always, I am joined by the Grizz. How are you, Grizz?
I'm good. Long off season for us, preparing for this year's worth of pods, and I suppose the team's been preparing as well to some extent. But it's good to be back.
Yeah, to some extent, it's probably a great call because they have told us that we need to stand our ground, which is an interesting slogan considering the team, I don't think, has stood its ground for 20 years. But yeah.
Or you could argue it stood its ground too much and hasn't gone anywhere. One of the two.
That's definitely true. So, but it has been a long off season because obviously we didn't get to participate in the round zero that has passed on the weekend, but it was highlighted by two practice games for the Bombers earlier in the piece. It was really a tale of two games, though, those two games, I think, for our preseason, Grizz. The St Kilda game was, to be honest, a bit of a disaster, and then the Geelong game was a much better showing.
Yeah, I always have a rider on preseason games being take whatever you want out of them. Like, historically, the results haven't meant much. Like, for example, I think Port Adelaide got beaten by Fremantle by 5 goals last year in the preseason. Port Adelaide were a top two team, whereas Fremantle missed the final. I think Carlton lost by 7 goals to Sydney in their preseason. So, like, the results, you know, results may vary. What was more worrying, I suppose, out of the St Kilda game was how we're just sort of beaten up around the contest, but I think we rectified that against Geelong. So I think a mixed bag is probably correct. What I try and take out of preseason games is maybe how we're setting up, particularly in the second game where we played Geelong, which is far more like our regular lineup, just to see how we worked. And I thought our midfield looked noticeably bigger. I thought Will Setterfield looked pretty good. I thought Parrish looked far more bulked up, which was good. And our defence looked pretty rock solid. I have concerns going forward about our forward line, but we can talk about that later. All in all, yeah, a bit of a mixed bag, and results may vary with preseason, so I'm not taking too much out of it.
Yeah, look, results do vary substantially during the preseason. I suppose my point of view is that if you're a club like Essendon that has struggled and needs to sell hope to the fans, you would be hoping you'd be switched on from the first bounce for preseason game. Now, I get it's preseason and all that, but the game against St Kilda just wasn't good enough, really. We've been a long-suffering supporter base. You could argue we've suffered a lot longer than anybody else at the moment because every other club seems, apart from the Gold Coast, has had a modicum of success, whether that be Carlton reaching the preliminary final last year. Yeah, St Kilda has lost a couple of grand. You know, every club's done it, but we haven't. And to just not show up at all in the first game was, I think, pretty disappointing. But it was rectified in the second game against Geelong. There was a lot of talk that, you know, when Geelong put the foot down, we just stepped aside to that last quarter, which I didn't really buy into because Peter Wright obviously didn't play that last quarter. Mason Redmond sat down. Ridley went down. So we were sort of already trying to tinker a little bit.
I think Merritt played like half of that last quarter, like barely played
all. Yeah, exactly. So the whole concept of, well, we just stood aside when Geelong put the foot down. I actually think it was sort of the other way around. I think Geelong, to be honest, at the start of the game, weren't really switched on for us. And then they sort of rested a few blokes throughout. And then that last quarter when they really bulked up, whereas, you know, we were the other way around, I think. So I don't think there was that at all. I thought the ball movement in the second game was much better. The problem I obviously had, and I think a lot of us had with the St Kilda game, was it was just the same old chip, 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 then long bomb and turnover and away we go, and we're getting blown out on the rebound. But that obviously didn't really eventuate in the Geelong game. Although I will point out, though, Grizz, Geelong did have a lot of scoring shots. So yeah, did they miss because of the pressure, or did they miss because they were just rusty?
Yeah, the first game with the new standards, Simmons Stadium, you know, really, really high pressure. So, look, again, the St Kilda game was sort of weird. RSEA Park, if anyone hasn't been there, like, it's a shithole to play at. Like, it's really, like, the wind blows in this weird direction. There's no wind cover. It's a weirdly shaped ground in terms of where the sun sets. It's just, if you don't practice there, it's a weird game to play at. And I think our issue with the St Kilda game was we just got beat up around the ball too much, which, talk about ye old Essendon, St Kilda just looked bigger than we did around the ball. But yeah, we rectified that against Geelong. What I was really impressed with Geelong was our clearance game. We sort of muscled up against Geelong in the clearances initially. Now, they were without Ken Guthrie, but other than Guthrie, like, They had Dangerfield, they had Holmes, they had all their sort of first choice midfielders through there. Now, Geelong, I don't suspect they're going to be a finals team. They weren't last year. So they're probably about our area. So it was good to at least be competitive in that space. But I keep going back to the fact of, you know, these preseason games are designed and specified to get certain things. I think in Collingwood and North Melbourne's first practice match, they only played like three quarters or something. And the last quarter was all sort of situational match sim with like fake scores and teams having to fit. Like, so the first games particularly, which was out against St Kilda, are very confected situations. We had a lot of players out in that game against St Kilda, where St Kilda had very much a full strength squad as well. So I don't know. I remember in 2022, we beat the Bulldogs, who were coming off a grand final at home at Windy Hill. That was a game that Nick Martin and Tex Wanganeen confirmed their rookie listings, and then had a really good game against St Kilda, who were finals the year before, and everyone's up and about, and then we got belted by Geelong by 75 points in round one. So even competitive preseason matches don't really mean much. For me, the big thing was our defense looked strong. That was the biggest takeaway for me for preseason. And Ridley out probably hurts that, but I thought McKay and Reed specifically. Reed, we'll get to our predictions about biggest bolters or surprises for this season coming up. Reed looked great. And I just think, you know, the midfield looked improved. The defense looked solid. For me, all the questions are forward or center.
Yeah, I think I thought that St Kilda were missing a few, and I can't. I'll be honest, I'm not going back to have a look, but I did think they did miss a few. I'm not too sure. I don't think they were quite at full strength, but probably were missing less than us. I just don't think I don't think that's enough to explain the margin. I think maybe talking about the fact that the home ground is such a weird one does play into it, and I think they may have just come a little bit earlier to play, because I think that's what Ross Lyon teams do, really. Ross Lyon traditionally does seem to get his teams up and about the start of the year. But one of the things you did mention about the Geelong game was Dangerfield and lack of danger and how we did it well there. So that sort of does segue into one bloke that I do want to touch on before we do anything for the preseason. That is Sam Darren, because I'll be honest, I did not see him as an inside mid. When I saw that we were going to start him in the centre square, I thought we must be looking for the number one draft pick, because I just did not see it at all. But he has been sensational in the middle over both games, really. His tenacity, his ability to get the ball, he's run both ways. It's been a breath of fresh air from a player that I honestly did not see it happening. And it'd be fantastic if he can carry that into round one against Hawthorn.
Yeah, and I think one of the underrated, see if you can call it underrated, off-season moves was Xavier Dersma. Who him playing on a wing frees up both Nick Martin to play behind the ball, but as you mentioned, Sam Darren to play more midfield. And the thing about Daz is he's slightly bigger than, you know, your Merritts and your Parishes and your Shields. He's 184, 185. He's about 86 kg. So he's just that slightly bigger frame. But what he has is what you said, that tenacity, both in attack and in defense, and willing to crash himself in. And I think that's what was really impressive with Daz, was he was defensively still getting back. So he was basically playing as a defensive midfielder and then crashing through packs to win clearances if it was there, which is a good balance, because we've got a lot of ball hunters in the middle, which is fine, but you need that balance out there. And I don't know, one thing that I think we've struggled for is midfield rotation for guys who aren't pure midfielders. So we have a lot of guys that play purely midfield, guys like Parrish and Shield and Merritt and Sedfield to an extent, but they can't really play anywhere else. So your midfield rotation is basically a starting midfield plus a couple guys chipping in and maybe one bench player. Whereas if you've got guys like Durham and Perkins and Martin rolling through there from other positions, all of a sudden your midfield bat's seven or eight deep, and you can actually, you rotate, you keep fresh through there. But I think Sammy Durham, I don't think he's got the A-level player in him. I don't think he's ever going to be that all-Australian type midfielder, but what he can be, I think he's that sort of Heath Hocking, Damien Peverill level inside midfielder that does all the gritty stuff that you'll want, that allows your other guys to go hunt the football.
Yeah, so he had 14 touches and 7 tackles and 65% time on ground, which is really good. And you're right, he won't ever be an All-Australian captain-style player, but every premiership list has a player like Sam Durham on their list when they win the flag. Now, whether or not we have a premiership list and whether or not he's going to be able to, you know, be that role-playing midfielder, who knows? He's two games into the role, so we'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, it was good signs early. So Now, we do have, unfortunately, as always at this time of year, some injuries to come out of the practice games and apparently some training mishaps too with Darcy Parrish. So round one, obviously we have Hawthorn. Ridley won't be there. Parrish is in doubt. Draper potentially will play. Depends, I suppose, on how he's pulled up for the VFL and how much they feel his match practice he's actually got. Oh, are these injuries that should concern us going into... Let's look at round one in isolation. Are we concerned for round one because of injuries? And then looking beyond round one, how much do the injuries impact us?
I think we're fortunate we're playing Hawthorn in round one, although they're probably going to be more competitive than you would think to the midfield. I think they're missing a few guys, but I think Ridley's the worrying one for me. So he's done a quad now. He did two quads last year, I think. He did a serious one towards the end, which ruled him out for the rest of the year. And he might have had another quad over the preseason or late the year before. So this is a recurring injury for him. And the thing is with quads, every time you do one, it just takes a little bit longer to get back. And it's the same quad he did last year. So they're talking a short-term quad. I don't know how short-term that is. And we have never historically been very forthwith with our accuracy on injuries. So I'm probably more worried about Ridley more than anyone. Like, I know they said Parrish's hamstring injury is a 1 or 2 week. There's no such thing as a 1 week hamstring. I'm sorry. Like, there always a couple. I think we'll still beat Hawthorn. They're missing Will Day. They're missing Jath, which might be the two most important players. And they're missing their key defender in blank. So Hawthorn... probably down on a bit of cattle as well, and we should beat them on merit anyway. But I think going forward the week after that, yeah, there are some concerns. Ridley probably more than Parrish though.
Yeah, I actually think that the AFL has come down on clubs being a little bit fast and loose with the injury list. I think they want a little bit more transparency. So it potentially that we are telling the truth these days, but we'll wait and see what appears. I mean, the injury list at the moment is still pretty bare. Jaden Hunter, obviously, unfortunately, did his ACL. Kane Baldwin has his foot fractures, the James Hurd injury, as I like to call it. So that's 13 weeks, but it could be longer, as we all know. Tex has a similar injury, but he's a bit more further along. And then, yeah, obviously, Jordan Ridley, they said 3 weeks, Darcy Parrish 1-2, and Dylan Sheila test. So there is talk Ridley could be back for the St Kilda game, which is a Saturday twilight in round three. But, yeah, we'll wait and see on that one. I just don't see how those injuries impact the game enough for us to lose to Hawthorn is probably my answer to the question as well, because I just don't rate Hawthorn.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, for me, the bigger concerns, particularly with Ridley, like I said, there's no such thing as a short-term quad, particularly if you've done it a couple of times. And I know the AFL's cracked down. What they've cracked down there on, I think, though, is the vagueness of the description. So, like, we were saying short-term, medium-term, long-term last year, which is about as helpful as a kick in the teeth. So I think we still have to put weeks on it. But if we can always say, oh, well, hasn't responded well, so it's another 3 weeks on top, and the AFL's not going to do anything. For me, the concern is after Hawthorn, it's Sydney and Sydney, St Kilda at Marvel, who are always tough at Marvel because it's a fast deck, Port in Adelaide, the Bulldogs at Marvel, Adelaide in Adelaide, Anzac Day, and then we finally get, you know, you would call it a quote-unquote easy game being the Eagles in Perth in round eight. So say it's a four-week injury, you're missing Hawthorn, Sydney and Sydney, St Kilda, Port in Adelaide. That's they're three very losable games. And we start 1-3, or, you know, 0-4 for to lose a Hawthorn. That's a big deal. You want all hands on deck, and to be missing, you know, probably Ridley and maybe Parrish for that period of time is a bit of a worry. But let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's just beat Hawthorn first and worry about Sydney when it comes.
It's interesting you mentioned St Kilda being hard at Docklands, because we're actually 4 of the last 5 against them at Docklands, with the only loss being an 11-point loss. The only other times they've gotten us was the G last year and at the Gabba, of all places, during the COVID years. So,
yeah, but I would argue they're a much better team than us. Like, I know we'll get to our season preview and suggestions later, predictions later. I think St Kilda are very much a finals team. I don't think we're as good. And St Kilda, their lineup, I know we've had a good record against them, but they've been pretty average over that span. And their record at Marvel is pretty good regardless outside of us. So I just don't know if that holds up. But we'll see in a couple of weeks, I suppose.
I guess I just look at it and go, we've been pretty average in that time too. So,
Yeah, it's a good point.
you
Yep.
know, yeah. So, but that, it's tough. You are right though. It's a very tough start to the season, and it will definitely show us where we are if we come out of that, you know, 1-7, 2-6, and obviously we're about probably where we think we are. Whereas if we come out of it 4-4, or you know, have a few extra couple of wins, and well, who knows? Maybe we're ahead of where we are, but. It'll be tough. It'll be a tough start, and definitely something I think that the club needs to be switched on from round one, from the very first bounce. If not, then yeah, we'll be chasing our tails like we are most seasons. But the lineup this
Saturday.
will be fascinating to watch, because we obviously have been playing Goldstein more or less by himself. I mean, Nick Bryan has chipped in, but he hasn't had much game time. I think when Goldstein's been playing, Bryan's been on the extended interchange, so to speak. And then when Bryan plays, Goldstein's wrapping his legs up in ice and having a frosty beer on the sideline. So where do you see the lineup starting this week? Are we going to take the two rucks? I think it's very dangerous to take a one ruck system in with just Todd Goldstein. Just purely because of his age, not because of the player, just purely because of his age.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of the two ruck setup to begin with. I just think it really limits you forward or centre. And I don't think we've got, like, you look at a team like Carlton, for example, when they play their second ruck, it just clogs up their forward line. Now, we don't have the tall timber that they do in Kurnow and McKay, but we do have, Wright and Stringer or Wright and Langford. And I just feel like an extra tall, which is what you're carrying with the second ruck, takes. Langford out of the goal square, which I feel like his best position is basically as a leader full forward. And so there's a difference in my head about what I would do and what I think we will do. What I think we will do is we'll play two rucks. If Draper is fit, I know there's some questions about whether that is the case. If he comes up fit, I think we play both of them. I think that might be a mistake, and we might play, Draper 30% ruck, 70% forward, or and bench in there somewhere. I would play the one ruck plus right and a whole bunch of mobile medium types. So you're right, yeah, Langfords and your stringers. If Caddy's fit, give him a debut and just try and create some chaos at ground level and some mismatches, noting that they're without Jath and they're without Will Day and they're without James Blank. They're going to have a sort of mixed hodgepodge defense, and I want natural forward who are mobile to take advantage of that. But I think if Draper's fit, we'll play both.
Yeah, I think we've touched on it before, but I'll touch on it again. I don't mind the two ruck system. I just think playing Todd Goldstein for where we are as a list is probably the wrong move. So I appreciate there's a lot of discussion that Nick Bryan's not ready and he needs more time to develop and all this mumbo jumbo. But the reality is he can be doing that at the AFL level, because the simple fact is we aren't winning the flag this year unless look unless we and look we might start 10 and 0 and all the talk we've done already is just completely and utterly irrelevant, and then we'll come back and we can have a different discussion then. But I get why they brought Todd in. He's a very good player. He's probably still a better player that I think than Draper and Bryan, obviously. Definitely Bryan. And you know, you can argue Draper depending on where you lie, but I think he's better than both. I just don't think from a list point of view and age profile, it makes any sense to give him game time this year. But I mean, the argument could be obviously made that if you don't play him, then you're hurting your midfield and taking away their development. But I think part of being a midfielder is learning how to rove your opposing ruckman when they're getting on top in the middle. Which Melbourne at the moment seem to definitely struggle against Sydney, because I don't think they were used to Max being beaten as comprehensively as he was by Brodie Grundy. So which is obviously an interesting byline to your theory that you should only play the one ruck and not two, because obviously we saw last year how poor Brodie Grundy looked in the two ruck system, and then all of a sudden he stood out amazingly in the one ruck again. So yeah, I'm not sure how that goes. The terms of forward line, I think you're right. I think if you have Wright, Langford, and a Stringer, you're probably already starting to get a little tall. If you're throwing another ruck, you're probably just too tall. Especially with Jakey, you know, as good as he is, he's not the most agile player going around. I think it's probably a fair statement, isn't it, Grizz?
Yeah, no, he's not. Yeah, I just think one in ice. No, I don't think he is the most mobile, but if you've got him and Langford and Wright, you're still okay, I think. I think with Jake Stringer, for example, I just think he's probably more in the key position forward than he is a mobile forward part of his career, if that makes sense. And the wear and tear on his body means he probably has to play more of a lead up full forward or center forward type role. So I think two rucks, right, Langford and Stringer is too tall. So one of them, I almost feel like if you're going to play the second ruck, you have to drop Stringer, which is sacrilege, I know, but I just, you have to have the smalls there to take advantage of the extra ruckman resting forward. He brings the ball to ground and we crumb. That has to be how we play if we're going to bring that extra second ruck. But I worry about mobility generally as well.
So I will ask the question. Small forwards, Matt Guelfi had a shocking game against Geelong. I don't think you can slice it any other way. Is he still going to be one of the first picked small forwards this year? Or do you see or do you hope that, you know, Jai Menzi, who was there alongside him last year, and Alwyn Davey and maybe even Jaden Davey all sort of moved past him and he's resigned to a depth role? Somebody pointed out, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody did say that a lot of his goals did come from Joe the Gooses or from, you know, the goal square. You can argue that you have to be in the right spot to get the goal, and that's great. But the reality is if you're getting a lot of your goals from those sort of opportunities, eventually those opportunities, as we saw, for example, totally different player but did get a lot of goals over the back was Josh Jenkins. And then, you know, eventually teams worked that out and he didn't have another string to his bow. Is Guelfi the similar danger of that happening, or do you think he can maintain his spot?
I think what Guelfi adds, which is a bit of intensity around the ball and defensive pressure, guys like Davies and guys like Menzi can't do consistently. I know Menzi works hard from a running perspective. He is a good team defender. I don't think he's necessarily quick enough at ground level to put on the pressure that Guelfi does. And I don't think Davies physically ready to do that. I don't think he does that consistently enough. And then I think Gresham's got one small forward role sort of locked up. And then I think Guelfi gets the other one. The other thing to consider is that we're probably going to play Perkins forward as well. He's not your genuine small. He's more your medium type. He's 188, 187 centimetres. We'll be resting guys like Parrish and, when fit, Parrish, guys like Merritt forward as well. Even guys like Martin will roll through there at different points. So you're probably only going to have two or three max genuine small. And I think to start the year, Guelfi has the runs on the board. So it'll be up to Davey or, you know, your Menzi or Jaden or Alwyn to overtake him first. But I think he's going to get first crack.
I do think sometimes that Guelfi's pressure is overstated. I get this stat's not everything, but he averaged, you know, 2.8 tackles last year, and Jai Menzi's averaged 2.3. So it's half a tackle a game, huge. And their 1%ers are basically identical. So, you know, not much difference in that regard either. I get Guelfi chases really hard and all that sort of stuff, but chasing really hard and not actually being able to lay your hands on somebody, how much pressure are you actually putting on that person? Oh, I would argue not much. I would argue it's similar to the argument that's been consistently made about Harry Jones in that, you know, but he runs really hard. Fantastic, but we're not here to win marathons. You actually need to be able to do something when you run really hard. So I'm not as sold on Guelfi's pressure as others, but I can understand that I'm definitely in the minority when it comes to that one.
Look, I think there's just the physical chase down tackle pressure is one thing. It's being in the right spot defensively from a team setup. There's Guelfi's willingness to put his body on the line for smothers and physical contact when the ball's in dispute. There are some players like the Davey boys who are just, they're too small and they might try and do it, but they don't affect the contest physically because they're not ready for it. I think Jai struggles to get across the ground in terms of his speed to do that consistently. So
I'm pretty sure a smother comes under the 1%ers, though, and that's my point, is that Guelfi doesn't, and I'm only comparing him to Menzi. I haven't looked at Davey because I think you're right about Davey. I don't think he's at the same level yet, but, you know, I mean, their 1%ers aren't that different, so...
Yeah, but the things about the 1% is just one metric. Like, it's like pressure acts. Like, 1,000 different things go into pressure acts, but I think... Guelfi just does a lot for the team that you don't see. Does a lot of blocking, does a lot of, he's always in the right spot defensively in the zone and stuff, which the young guys and even Menzies at times. I love Menzies. I think he works hard and he's creative at times, but there are just some defensive side of his games which can lapse, and that just is going to come with experience at AFL level. But and that probably goes to your argument of, well, just play him then.
well, it kind of does, because the argument is, well, he's going to learn it and get up to that level. Then why are we playing? Why would you play Guelphy, who probably is at his level, well, and has probably reached his ceiling?
I don't think Menzies at Guelphy's level.
Well, no. But if he can get there through playing, then why wouldn't you give it a shot? Because and see if he can, you know, get there and go beyond, as I said, as opposed to somebody who I think has probably reached their peak of what they're going to do at 26, well, 27 by the time the season ends, years of age. Well, that's just my opinion. But
yeah. But 27's not old. Like, and if this is what Matt Guelphy is, and you get 3 years of this, and why replace him for someone that might get there if you give him the game time? If Guelphy was 30, I'd get your argument. Yeah, fine. And we're having this argument at Goldstein and Brian. Like, I get it. I get you. Agree completely. If we're going to play two rucks, play Brian. Because we know what we've got. There's no future benefit to playing Goldstein over Brian, right? But, and no one's, I wouldn't make that argument. It doesn't make any sense because, like you said, we're not going to win the premiership. But Guelphy is 27. So it's not like in 2 or 3 years' time, if we are pushing for that finals sort of race, you know, even then he might be 29, 30, sort of in the prime of his career. And for what he is, which is a solid workman footballer, I just don't, yeah, he's not the guy I'd be bumping out for the young guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I just, yeah, as I said, I just look at it and go, 27 years old, you're probably not going to get much better. Are we really happy to keep giving games to a guy who, you know, last year had 10 touches, 3 tackles and a goal a game? Yeah, maybe. But you'd probably be hoping for more. Which is why I played the young guys, hoping that they would get better. And if they don't, well, then the same argument would be made. I'd be banking the same argument about them. You know, they hit Guelphy's level and don't go beyond that. Then I'd be saying, well, are they good enough? Don't know. But yeah, I'm not sold. Guelphy is a lock in the best 22, but we'll wait and see. He may very well prove me wrong. Apart from that, we'll go down the other end of the ground. We'll just touch on the other end very, very briefly. So obviously Ridley's gone for however long, hopefully not too long, but we'll wait and see. So that probably saves Jaden Laverde from the firing squad, to be honest, because I think if you've got Mackay and Reed and Cox, who they are now seemingly determined to play down back, you and Ridley as well, you don't play Laverde. I don't see how he fits in the side, which is incredible considering that I think Laverde was one of our, nearly one of our almost locked-in players last year because he played so well down back. But yeah, how do you see that lining up this
Saturday?
Is it those four plus, you know, your Martins, your Redmonds, and Heppel is not seemingly not going to be there,
and McGrath will be the seventh,
and
guy
McGrath there. Will be there as well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So I actually think it's Cox that was saved. I think a bit like Guelphy, I think Laverde has runs on the board. He was always going to get picked over Cox. But I think Ridley, not because Cox not played badly, I think Cox was fine, but I just think Scott tends to pick the guys with the runs on the board. So I think that's probably saved Cox over Laverde for week one. But it'll be really interesting to see how Laverde plays with Ben Mackay. So he's taken the second guy or even a third guy with Reed, as opposed to the big, you know, number one key forward, not that Hawthorn have too many of them. It'll be interesting to see. I do think that's a four plus Redmond, Martin, McGrath, and maybe Hepp will play. But I would, as much as I love Hepp, I hope not. I think he's someone that we've definitely gone past, but that's been beaten to death. What's your prediction on the game, Bonds? I presume you think us. I think it's us by 4 goals. I think we'll win comfortably, but not greatly. What about you?
I think we'll belt them. I just don't rate Hawthorn. It's probably my weakness here. I just don't rate Hawthorn. So yeah, I don't have any issues there. I think we definitely do it. But for the season, pass mark. What do you think is a pass mark? How do you measure that?
So I'm not a finals or bust person. I don't think we've got a final. I don't think we're a guaranteed final spot. I think we're in the. There's probably 8 or 9 teams, I think, fighting from 5 through, or probably from, sorry, 8 or 9 teams fighting for 6 through 14 or 15. I think there's only 3 or 4 really bad teams this year. And then we'll be riding that glut of Geelong, Gold Coast, the Bulldogs, Fremantle, those sorts of teams trying to fight for the bottom end of the 8. I think we're a 9 or 10 win team, to be honest, which puts us right about where we were last year. But a pass mark for me will be by the end of the year, we've gotten 15 games into Cox and Reed, and Perkins has taken next. Like, I want to see the young guys step up that are playing, and I want to see our team transition away from guys like, you know, I know we just talked about him, but Heppel and Laverty and even Guelphy, if the young guys overtake him, and into that next phase of the team. For me, pass mark is 9. I know that sounds pessimistic, but we were pretty close to the mark last year and the year before. Just looking at the draw, I've got pass mark at 9, which puts us, you know, bottom end of that glut of teams fighting for the 8.
So we won 11 games last year. Yep. And I think you and I sat here after the trade period and said we probably had improved our list based on who had gone and who we got in. So I think we should be at least attempting. I think anything less than what we did last year is probably a fail for me. So I'm probably and I don't know if we'll do it. That's the thing. So I'm not convinced we'll win 11 or 12 games, but I think if we don't, it's a fail. So it's a little bit of a tricky one. The big one for me is, so last year our percentage was 89.7, which was the fourth worst percentage in the league. If we have the fourth worst percentage in the league again, I will be calling for Brad Scott's head. I'm just because that just to me is just an abysmal stat, because it clearly shows that we gave up during more games than most other sides, because obviously we got blown away a lot more than other teams.
Things I remember about last year, 5 wins, 5 games against Hawthorn, West Coast and North Melbourne combined for 5 wins. So I think our win total was skewed by that, to be honest. Against everyone else, we were mediocre at best. So
Potentially, but we should be looking to improve. I think we should be looking to improve. So
I think in the AFL, with the amount of teams that are in that glut of the middle of the 8, you can improve 10%. And fall down the ladder because other teams have improved by more. Like the Gold Coast, I think, are going to be much better than we are. In terms of the amount of improvement, I don't know if we're going to be better than St Kilda. I don't think we're going to be better than Adelaide. I don't think we, like, there's just so many teams that if you put us head to head, I'm like, I'm not sure we're going to be better than them. But that's fine.
I don't think we are either, but I don't think we are. I just think we should be, is probably my point. And on the Gold Coast, I'll wait till they play someone other than Richmond before I worry about them too much, because, again, I just don't rate Richmond's youth at all, as was exposed in that first half. But we'll quickly touch on a couple more things before we run out of time. Best and fairest winner, I'm going to go with first on that one. I will say in a contract year, Jake Stringer will win our best and fairest, because it just seems like it's a bit of a meme running through the board. So I'm going to embrace it fully and say Stringer will win the best and fairest.
I think Nick Martin, Zach Merritt's obviously always the safe bet, but just for the sake of interest, I think Nick Martin's going to have a hell of a year coming off halfback playing the Nick Dacos role.
Leading goal scorer, I will say Kyle Langford. I think Peter Wright will play a full season, but I still think Langford will score more goals because he is a natural forward. And last year he did it without support. So give him support and not having to take the number one defender, I think he'll be even better.
So Stringer's best and fairest, but Langford's leading goal kicker. We may well make the finals if that's the case. But I think I was going to say Langford, but for the sake of interest, I'm going to say Wright. I think his goals per game when he came back would have won up. But I think before he got injured again, towards back end of the year, would have put him right up the Langford. I think Peter Wright too is a good bet. And particularly because we know he's going to get kicked too, because he's one of the sole genuine key tool options down there.
I mean, Jakey only kicked 40 in that year that he was which in the 2021 season, which was clearly his best year. So I think Langford kicks more than 40, but, you know, we'll wait and see. I think it's been a long time since we've had multiple players kick 40 plus during a season.
Yep.
And the last one, Biggest improver. I'll just jump in and say, and based on my comments earlier, it probably won't come as a surprise to you. I think Sam Darren will definitely be the most improved player on the ground for us this year and embrace his new role.
I think Nick Martin probably is coming from too high a base to be the biggest improver. I don't know if this is a cheating answer, but I think Zach Reed, I know he's coming from an incredibly low base, being not having played a game last year, but I think he, I was defending him last year when everyone was writing him off as a bust. I'm pretty happy that he's coming through just because I think him and Mackay could really set our defense up going forward. So I'm going to say Zach Reed because he looked pretty good against Geelong.
If I had to pick someone down back, I would say Nick Cox purely because I just want him to come good. And I think if you put him in the spot, he will. But that will do us, Chris. So thank you for joining me this evening. Thank you to everybody who is listening. And as always, please remember to like, subscribe, and tell all your friends about the new season of the Bombercast.